And because he's trying to upset expectations, I think in many ways, this triumphant entry is also an upset.
This is Chapter, Verse, and Season, a lectionary podcast from Yale Bible Study. Join us each week as two Yale Divinity School professors look at an upcoming text from the Revised Common Lectionary. This episode, we have Almeda Wright, Associate Professor of Religious Education, and Kate Ott, Lecturer in Practical Theology. They're discussing Mark chapter 11, verses 1 through 11, which is appointed for Palm Sunday in Year B. The text is read for you by our production manager, Kelly Morrissey.
Mark chapter 11, verses 1 through 11. When they were approaching Jerusalem at Bethpage and Bethany near the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples and said to them, "Go into the village ahead of you, and immediately as you enter it, you will find tied there a colt that has never been ridden. Untie it and bring it. If anyone says to you, 'Why are you doing this?' just say this, 'The Lord needs it and will send it back here immediately.' They went away and found a colt tied near a door outside in the street. As they were untying it, some of the bystanders said to them, 'What are you doing, untying the colt?' They told them what Jesus had said, and they allowed them to take it. Then they brought the colt to Jesus and threw their cloaks on it, and he sat on it. Many people spread their cloaks on the road, and others spread leafy branches that they had cut in the fields. Then those who went ahead and those who followed were shouting, 'Hosanna! Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the coming kingdom of our ancestor David. Hosanna in the highest heaven!' Then he entered Jerusalem and went into the temple. And when he had looked around at everything, as it was already late, he went out to Bethany with the 12.
So Mark 11 is an interesting account of the quote-unquote triumphant entry. And the reason I'm saying quote-unquote triumphant entry is because when you read the Mark account of the triumphant entry, it's really muted. It's almost, okay, let me just be honest. I was reading this again for today's session, and I was thinking to myself, wait a minute, what? What is this? Is this all of the Palm Sunday, like hosannas? None of the pageantry that you often expect or even that we celebrate or recreate in our Sunday morning worship services on Palm Sunday is in this particular text. I read it and I had to read it three times and I was like, it's still not giving me all of the pomp and circumstance that I normally expect. And so it's interesting as you read through this and you're like, okay, so you got Jesus's disciples going to get the donkey. You got them coming through. You've got all of this good stuff. And it's like one verse, Hosanna. Bless it. And then you're like, wait a minute, but I want more of this. And so you even get down to the end and it's almost as if you're like, what's happening here? Of course, you know, thinking about the commentary and the understanding of Mark being closer or one of the earlier accounts, I'm wondering, was this triumphant entry not quite so triumphant? And what would that mean for the narrative, for the rest of our understanding of the story of Jesus?
I share that feeling having read this passage again for this conversation. First, I always get confused about which of the passages there's going to be a donkey and a colt, and Jesus gets to ride on both. So in this one, you know, there's just this, like, I think an inevitability to what Jesus does, and even maybe a bit of how the crowd feels in the way Mark tells it. I have to say, reading it, I even questioned, okay, if I'm visualizing this in my mind, I wonder, you know, when Jesus' disciples say, "What are you doing untying that colt?" And they say what Jesus said, "The Lord needs it. We'll send it back immediately." Whether the people around are sort of like, okay, sure, go for it. Let's see what happens. I mean, there is a bit of kind of our reality TV culture that I see in this passage. How many of the people are shouting Hosanna as mockery? And how many are there so worried about the future of this movement, this person that they have come to honor as rabbi, wondering what's going on in all of these mixed emotions. But triumph is not the thing that comes to mind when I read this passage.
Right. And I think what I'm hearing also, as you're saying that, is this reality that oftentimes, particularly from our modern day perspective, there's a protest or there is some public event, and the people who are in the crowd might be there intentionally to support the public event, and some might have just gotten caught up in whatever's happening or are like, you know, looky-loos coming to see what's happening. And, you know, you have to imagine that there's a little bit of all of that in this crowd as well, as well as us wondering how much of a crowd there actually was, because it makes for a better story. If you want this triumphant king, this big Messiah, for there to be a huge group. But I think also what's playing out in Mark's read and what Mark is trying to do in the text is to really upset the expectations that we're going to have this triumphant king or this huge Messiah that is going to have this kind of earthly power and overthrow the Roman government. And because he's doing all of these reversions or trying to upset expectations, I think in many ways, this triumphant entry is also an upset. It's like, there's something that's happening here, but it may not be as large as even we want it to be, or even as some of the other gospel narratives let it play out.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, that also goes back to the way in which we think about Advent and Advent pairing with Lent, thinking about the sort of narrative themes within both, right? I mean, the manger itself is a letdown, right? This king of kings that's going to be born.
In a stable
with the animals, all right? Where no one knows what's happening. I'm also thinking at that point, maybe Mary was like, what did I say yes to? The disciples might be saying that same thing in this. We know that they then have second thoughts even later. I think to me, that brings us then to this last verse. So we go from Hosanna, Hosanna in the highest heaven, to then Jesus entered Jerusalem and went to the temple. And when he had looked around at everything, as it was already late, he went out to Bethany with the 12. It's sort of like, wait, there was this parade, this crowd. Maybe again, that contributes to our understanding that actually it wasn't that big. It wasn't as triumphant as we thought it was. Because apparently Jesus just gets off the colt and goes to check out the temple. But if we think about the symbolism of that,
right,
we stick with this notion of Mark trying to upset our expectations. It might also be that Jesus is going to the temple, which we hear from the commentators as a religious political symbol, a symbol of Roman power at the time, in terms of how they were controlling the politics and religious leadership. This is Jesus in the moment also trying to signal, perhaps, to those who followed him, to those with him, to the 12, that this is not what you expect. Mm-hmm. What you expect is not going to happen. It's actually potentially going to be the opposite.
Right. Because the typical expectation is that if Jesus goes to the temple, this would be the place where he starts teaching, or this would be the place where he starts expounding on what he's going to do. This is where he establishes his platform and rallies more people and gets the people all rah-rah. Instead, it's like, he looks around. And then he says, I'm tired. I'm going to go take a nap. And you're like, okay, Jesus, we see you, but do we like it? Do we understand it? Are we comfortable with that kind of upset? And I think that's the other side of it. When you have expectations of revolution or revolutionary leadership or a Messiah or a king, what does it mean even for us as people who know this story, who have this as part of our tradition, to say, that are we comfortable with these types of revisions, or are we comfortable with this type of reversals of what the power expectations are? Even for those of us who say, yes, we believe in equality and justice and egalitarianism, are we still looking for a hierarchical model of power that says power over instead of this communal grassroots power with?
And how do we sit with the fact that it actually just might have been the reality that it was power with? I think we always go to the, I want the revolution, I want the reversal, no matter what side of the issue it is that we are on, which is why probably multiple years later, with gospel revisions adding in Q, we get triumph.
Yes. We get a big hype.
Yeah, we get hype. We get a much bigger parade when Jesus comes in. And to this day, Christian communities, when we celebrate this, you know, everybody's got their palms. We're really making this much bigger than perhaps the reality that it was. What would it be like in our communities to ask ourselves, why do we need that? And what is it that perhaps this narrative of Jesus, not only, you know, in a way, I see Jesus as kind of saying, yeah, go get the colt. I'm coming in. But you need to see what happens when I come in. You need to see that perhaps it's not what you thought it was going to be. And that we are then also going to go to the temple. We're going to check out what's actually happening there. And we are going to leave. You are going to see that that is not the place where the change happens in this narrative at this time. And how unsettling that might be for some of us who want it to be that political religious center that is the place that makes change, or that it is a crowd that gathers fully enthused without any detractors. But that's not how life works for us. It's not how life worked in Jesus's time either. But what do we do then as we move through to Easter and ask ourselves, what does that meaning carry with us? How do we do the everyday work of change that is also the grace of Easter? Doesn't make it, we don't lean into a sort of magic of change, but we see the everydayness and the mundaneness of what it means to live for change.
Thanks for listening. For a transcript of today's episode and lots more, check out yalebiblestudy.org. Chapter, Verse, and Season is a production of the Center for Continuing Education at Yale Divinity School. It's produced by creator and managing editor Joel Baden, production manager Kelly Morrissey, associate producer Aiden Stoddart, and I'm your host and executive producer Helena Martin. And our theme music is by Calvin Linderman. We'll be back with another conversation from Chapter, Verse, and Season.